This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. So, tomorrow is Election Day. Have you noticed yourself, your friends, your family members saying something to the tune of, I cannot wait until this election is over? But that leads us to the next important question. What happens on Wednesday? Chances are we'll wake up knowing who won the race for the White House, and most likely who won the other political races. And we'll likely know what happened to the proposals on Michigan's ballot. But what then? Will there be a sense of, all right, let's try to work out a consensus, let's try to give this guy a fighting chance of tackling our enormous problems? Or will the great divide grow even deeper and more embittered? From coast to coast, it seems as though this election has somehow brought out the worst in America. The polarization, the accusations, the snarkiness, the venom. What has happened in our country and in our state? And what does it portend for the course of our nation starting on Wednesday, November 7th? John Bebo is the president and CEO of the Center for Michigan. Their mission to be independent, nonpartisan, and citizen-led, building coalitions, building bridges to help Michigan. And Vincent Duffy is a veteran broadcast journalist who is Michigan Radio's news director. Now, Vince, you've covered a lot of election cycles. How do you think this one compares in terms of being bitter and nasty?
I don't think that it's any more bitter or nasty or acrimonious than many of the past elections that we've covered. If you think about the efforts that report against President Clinton to try to unseat him and the anger that many people held towards the second President Bush in those campaigns and the horrible things that were said about the candidates in the last race when it was McCain versus Obama and their colorful vice presidential candidates that got a lot of media. I think what makes it feel like it's different this time is that this is the first presidential race that where social media has really been as prevalent in our lives. And so even in our leisure time, what typically is our leisure time, we are being bombarded with partisanship and we're seeing more partisanship from our friends perhaps than we're used to seeing. And so we have heard, the talk radio people say bad things, and we've seen certain cable networks go all out against one candidate or another. And we see the political ads on TV and hear them on the radio. But even now, we're getting it from our friends. And I think that that has raised it to a level that we weren't used to in the past. You would talk to your neighbors and you get it at cocktail parties, but now it's, every day at lunch, if you log on to Facebook or you go home and you get on to Facebook, you can't escape it. And you have people now that are defriending each other over political comments and getting into arguments that get rather lengthy on Facebook. And so I think that has added to the feeling that it's more acrimonious this time. But I think from a party level, from the slings and arrows that are being thrown from each party to the other candidate, I don't think it's really that much worse than it's been in the past. It's more of the same, really.
John Bebo, what's your take on as we're winding down at last?
I would agree with Vince. I think 2000 was the election year where I think we saw some heightened partisanship when the presidential race was decided essentially by the Supreme Court, and you remember how long that took. That seemed to kick off a new wave, not the first wave, but certainly a new wave in hyper-partisanship in this country. I mean, look at 2004, the Swift boat ads. That was as nasty as anything this year. 2008, you had some polarizing characters there. Sarah Palin certainly was a polarizing character, whether you liked her or not. I don't think this year is any more partisan on the presidential level. I think to the issue of voter fatigue, I think there are a couple things in play this year. One, it's been an extremely long race, presidential race. In some ways, I thought that was good. I thought the number of debates in the Republican primary was very healthy. I think it wore people out, but it was good. There were a lot of things that were brought on the table by a lot of different perspectives, and I think that's what we ultimately want, even if we get tired of it. At the state level, I think the fatigue is exacerbated by how complex and long the ballot is this year. The six ballot proposals are it takes some study to understand them. My wife was at my office this morning printing out all of our Bridge magazine coverage, and it took 15 minutes to print out the things that she wanted in order to make her decisions tomorrow. So I think it's a complex ballot, and I think that's why we're all a little tired of it.
But there is something that I'm sensing, and maybe it is the Facebook postings. It seems that somehow we as a nation have begun to see our political opponents not merely as wrong, but as evil.
Well, this comes from the, you know, Roger Ailes, Karl Rove side of campaigning, and you know that they are, you know, Republican operatives, and certainly the Democrats have responded in kind, and we are in an era where you know, politics is as much a sport, and where it's not just to good enough to disagree with your opponent, but you need to vilify them and destroy them, and it's, and, you know, it's a game where you know, compromise is seen by many people on both sides as a dirty word. You have to win 100% of what you want or let nothing happen. You know, if you look historically at the country, this is not new.
Okay.
We perhaps, because we have electronic media, are more aware of this. But if you go back to the Lincoln-Douglas debates, horrible things were said about the candidates. If you look at the presidential campaigns before that, when the press was much more partisan than it is now, there were horrible things and vile things said about the candidates by the parties. And maybe it's just that more people are paying attention to it, or it's easier to reach the population now. But there was no time in our nation's history where there was this, you know, polite, genteel campaigns that were taking place, especially at the national level. I think maybe that's just a short-term memory problem.
Mm.
Everything always seems like it's worse today than it was in the past. But there's no history of polite politics that has ever existed in our country. So I don't know that that's really the case.
I will say I was watching C-SPAN a couple weeks ago, and they had a replay of one of the presidential debates in 1992. And Bill Clinton and the first George Bush and Ross Perot were downright civilized compared to what we're seeing today. I was really struck by that. But I agree with Vince. For whatever reason, I'm finding myself reading in my spare time a lot of Civil War history right now. And the tenor between the two times is there are some interesting parallels. So we're not talking mm-hmm. about slavery today.
Right,
but
right.
Just the level of animosity seems similar to that time. As you look forward, I don't know what it is that's going to break that. I don't know what it is that's going to bring us together as a people, or what will ultimately split us as a nation. It's hard to see how one leader could rally this country to be on the same side right now. I think the last moment we had anything close was 9/11.
Yes.
But that was fleeting.
Very fleeting.
And it led to a couple of extremely costly and fruitless wars.
I think that one of the things that makes it feel different now, too, is that when you look at the presidential campaign and the race that John was just talking about, you know, at that time, it was much more difficult to shield yourself from alternative views than it is now. With the way that the electronic media is shaped right now, I wouldn't recommend it. But if you want to, you can spend the months before the campaign hearing only from people who you suspect are going to agree with you.
Echo chamber.
Right, and
yeah.
Who give you information that will reinforce your opinion and vilify the opposition. And you can do this, you know, whether you are on the right or on the left.
Absolutely.
Certainly listeners to this program are not likely to be individuals who are shielding themselves from one opinion or another. But I think that contributes to you know, the social ability among friends, neighbors, and families to have a complete lack of understanding of why somebody would think differently, because you're surrounding yourself 24/7 or throughout the course of a campaign with like-minded viewpoints, and when those individuals who are spouting that material demonize the other side, after a while, I think you're likely to agree with that. And then you want to then demonize people who agree with the demons of the other side. And it becomes, you know, like you said, an echo chamber.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with John Bebo, the president and CEO of the Center for Michigan, and Michigan Radio's news director, Vincent Duffy, talking about can we get along politically and as a nation, and what will be happening the day after the election. You've both pointed to this demonization that can happen from basically listening to people who agree with you, and the lack of consensus, which leads me to question what can get done within either Congress or in the state legislature when you have this entrenched sense of we're not talking to them. I'm not getting on the elevator with him. And we have heard stories anecdotally from people who walk through the state capitol and say, you know, they used to go out. Maybe they would fight hard in chambers and then go out and have a beer together. And you don't see that so much. Are we paying in terms of bills not getting acted on and action not being taken?
Well, we're taping today in Ann Arbor, and there's an Ann Arborite who speaks quite well to this, Tony Dezinski. Tony D. Has been on the city council here, and he's a former state legislator. And he talks eloquently about that, that, yeah, in the back in the day when he was in the state senate, they would fight tooth and nail, but they would go out for a beer afterward. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't see that today, and I spend quite a bit of time in the Capitol, and I don't see it either. You saw this year with the election scandal in Grand Rapids with Roy Schmidt switching parties and the speaker being involved, Speaker Jace Bolger being mm-hmm. being involved in that. I think that kind of activity is pretty commonplace today. The strategists on both sides are constantly looking for that leg up. And the question come Wednesday morning is how are you going to work together? What are you going to do to get done? And right now in the Michigan legislature, because it is so highly one-sided Republican right now, for the past 2 years, the Democrats have been relegated to a backbencher status where they haven't used that as a negotiating tactic to get things done very often. Instead, it has been positioning for the next race. And I think that's really unfortunate. You see it from both parties, though, and you see it on the federal level with Congress. We have big budget issues that need to be dealt with yet this year. And if Congress goes back into session and it's simply more fighting, if Obama wins, mm-hmm. it's getting to the stage of real irresponsibility. If we're talking about government shutdowns and we're talking about just not being able to operate anymore, there has to come a point when everybody gets past this and begins to work to get things done.
Well, I think the fact Congress has an approval rating of, what, 11%?
Well, but voters, I think, are to blame for this as well because— You know, we have seen a very inactive Congress during this past session, and that's because they really cannot cooperate to get things done. You know, no matter who wins the election, they're going to have to deal with the Congress that they have, mm-hmm. and it's not going to be a Congress that is going to be likely to get a whole lot done. But what happens is, and we've seen this again and again recently, that if you are seen as a legislator who is willing to compromise, you lose the primary to somebody who promises that they will not compromise with the other side when they're sent to Congress. And we've seen through, you know, the way that redistricting is done in many states that you have districts where people are sent to Congress by courting the extreme to either the right or the left, depending upon which way their district is drawn.
Right.
And so you get people in Congress who then do refuse to compromise and see that as a weakness, and you don't have the statesmen that you had in the past. You have people who are always thinking about that next election and do not want to ever be seen as weak. And it's unfortunate that we have, a situation where voters have agreed that they see compromise as something that's a weakness in a politician.
A similar dynamic is in play in the Michigan legislature. The state political parties, these are not grassroots parties that are built from the ground up in church basements. These are big businesses. And they never stop operating. And if you look at the Michigan legislature, we have 110 reps and 38 senators. If only the House is on the ballot this year. If you look at those 110 races, only about a quarter of them are even remotely competitive tomorrow. Hmm. Most of those races have already been decided. They've been decided by redistricting. They've been both parties are complicit in this. The Republicans have the upper hand right now, but the Democrats have had the upper hand in past decades. And both parties are complicit in making sure that many of the races are not competitive after the August primary. Who votes in August? Party stalwarts on both sides.
Right.
So you see both parties running to the edges, running to the extremes in the August primary in order to court the base. And that's what's winning in the primary. When you get to the general, most of the listeners of this show today are not really voting for the state house tomorrow. The race is already decided. It's based on historical voting patterns. Mm-hmm. There are about two dozen races that are up for grabs. Both parties want it that way. They don't want to have to spend big money in 110 different races. Both parties are complicit in this system, and I think it's disenfranchisement in terms of Michigan politics.
Vince, what do you hear as you get the listener comments and the listener emails responding to coverage? And I mean, you're the one that really addresses that when you talk to people. What are you hearing this election cycle?
Well, everyone that calls, not everyone, many people who call because they believe that they've heard bias in a particular story or in how we've covered an issue. Usually when a caller is calling to complain about bias, their real complaint is that we did not demonstrate the bias that they would have demonstrated if they had the opportunity to do the story. Most of the time I can talk to an individual about how we put the story together and we can end the phone call understanding what took place. There's a real misunderstanding, I think, on a lot of people's parts about how journalism is done and the amount of power that we do or we don't have. The calls that I find frustrating are the individuals who call and are very angry that we are refusing to cover something that they know is true because they got an email about it from their aunt or their cousin or the guy down the street, and they are talking about something that in fact is not true. But those are the calls that are most frustrating is when somebody calls and says, you know, why are you in the media refusing to cover this issue? And the answer is often because, well, it's wrong. And you can point them to a number of different places, but at the end of the phone call, they still won't believe you that it's wrong. They think you're part of a vast media conspiracy cover-up of some sort of piece of information.
I'll give you a couple thoughts about media, but I'll first say I am extraordinarily biased when it comes to media because I've been in the business for almost a quarter century. You know, one question is the media to blame for what's going on in politics? And I think that needs to be looked at a couple of different ways. One of my biases is I think from a print media perspective, I think in Michigan, I think our traditional newsrooms, our newspapers, and I would put public radio in this category too, have done an extraordinary job this year explaining ballot proposals to people, covering the issues and covering the candidates. And it's extraordinary because they're doing more with less than they've done at any time in my professional lifetime.
In terms of resources.
In terms of resources. Yeah. And I think they are working their tails off, and I think they deserve a lot of credit for that. Add to that some new models, Bridge Magazine, our publication being one of them, working to do in-depth work. Add to that other nonprofit organizations like Publius.org, where you can go on today and get your ballot printed out right down to the dog catcher race. You'll know what you're facing. Those are great resources for voters. As complimentary as I am to some of those things, I think another part of the media is definitely to blame for the tenor of things in this country and in this state. And I'm not sure how talk radio hosts sleep at night on both sides. I don't care if you're a Rush Limbaugh fan or a Rachel Maddow fan. I think they're both extremely irresponsible, and they're not helping this country one bit.
Lots to think about as we head to the polls tomorrow. John Bebo of the Center for Michigan, publishing Bridge Magazine, and Vince Duffy of Michigan Radio, our news director. Thanks for talking with us today.
You're welcome.
It's always good to be here. Thanks.